make death your life coach. In all decisions, in all relationships, if you were to leave this planet today, would you be satisfied? And if you're not satisfied, what can you change today?
I am a quiet person that doesn't deserve this. Or when I have two roads, I always seem to not listen to my intuition. I always go the wrong path. What do you say to a person? Because that could go on for years and years and years, and it's only going to get worse, right?
I think shame is a very healthy thing. If I yell at my kids and act out of integrity, I'm ashamed. Shame is supposed to make you self-analyze and create better solutions and outcomes, not to keep you in a self-holding pattern. So if you can distinguish the two areas in your life, you can quickly start to disconnect from the one that's holding you in the pattern to get down to what is the real truth here.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Mary Tagliano. Mary, how are you? What's happening?
I'm so good, Ben. Thank you so much for having me on here today. We spoke about this a month ago in preparation, and I felt so good about our first conversation. I've been looking forward to connecting and creating this space. So thank you.
Not a single week has passed without me thinking like, oh, I'm looking forward to this conversation. And it's going to be slightly different than some of the ones I've had on the show. And that's part of why I'm so excited about it. To super quickly introduce Mary, guys. She is an innovative end-of-life coach, a grief counselor, and death doula with over a decade of experience. She's truly reshaping how we approach end-of-life care through her work at Anam Cara Academy. Did I say that right?
Anam Cara Academy, but it's spelled Anam. So people say it like that a lot. So it's okay.
Anam Cara Academy. And that is in the show notes, while also diving into new areas of healing with, you know, different modalities like psychedelic facilitation. So let's start out with death doula, because that actually might be a new term for a lot of people. What is a doula?
Yeah, I mean, you have birth doulas and you have end-of-life doulas, and we all know what a birth doula does, and an end-of-life doula is doing that, but in reverse. So we are supporting people energetically. Sometimes we're supporting them with paperwork, so logistically, and just being there as an initial seer and usher into the next life. So we hold that sacred space and we complement hospice. So we fill in the gap. So hospice at the end of life, they come in and they have specific things that they need to do before they see their next patient. And the real pain point is the support. And so that's where we come in and then hold that the energetics around what a family is going through.
Something we're all going to need at some point in our time on this earth.
Yes. Yeah, it's something, everybody's an end-of-life doula. You're human, so you have what it takes to inherently just pass away, and you know what to do. But it's great because we need support, we need community, and we need kind of somebody to be that holder of space and director of space and compassionate in that space and introduce new normals into these spaces where sometimes that's missing.
The new normal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, and I'll reply, but I'm curious, why do you think I wanted you on the show to talk to these successful business professionals?
Because I think you're very intuitive. And you know, probably somewhere in there, that having an understanding or relationship with death can only fuel a business and the people who are running the business. And so I think you had a clear understanding somewhere in your subconscious that a death doula and business might just be a really interesting conversation.
and you're nailing it. It's a conversation I think we need to have. And a lot of the listeners might know, some of them might not, but I lost my father to alcoholism in 2016. My mother passed last year, August of 2022. I like to say from a broken heart, but I'm 32 years old, and you know, my grandfather passed away. He was my biggest mentor. And I mean, you know this better than anybody. I can't change any of that. But I'm looking to build a successful business and have the greatest impact and inspire people and help people. But I'm also going through stuff behind the scenes, something almost no one knows about. And I won't go deep into it because some of the information I really shouldn't talk about is I was part of a clinical trial for medicine for depression and took it wrong, this or that, and had like a near-death experience where neither of these happened, but I thought I peed and pooped myself, thought I was going to die. And then afterwards, I'm like, I was not going to die. This was silly. And this is just me projecting some things that have occurred in my life. But whether or not someone has went through those like three items, we all go through really traumatic, frustrating things in relation to death. We can't avoid it, can we?
No. And why would we? Why would we? We came here to experience death because that's the one thing that we all know is going to happen. This can't happen forever. This living in this one thing, everything in this paradigm changes. And I want to go backwards for a second and just say my condolences to you. I sending you a lot of love, especially losing a mentor and your parents. And this is August. So I know that this month probably means a lot to you in reference to where you were a year ago. And I just want to send you love and some compassion for that, because I don't want to just skip over that piece of the thing you just talked about. And as far as the psychedelics, as you're speaking, what it sounds like to me is you were able to experience your death. And in the experience of a death in reference to being on a psychedelic, you can have that feeling of, oh my gosh, did I pee myself? Did I poop myself? Because you went far from the body. And there's this like trying to connect, like, you know, what happened? And so it sounds like you got to kind of have like a mini practice of what it must feel like to let go in some way. So I think it's beautiful. I don't think you did it wrong at all. I think that was exactly the experience.
The concept of letting go and the grief when you have to is difficult. So if someone feels like they're stressed or having trouble focusing on their business because of it, like, what would you say to that person to kind of get them back on track?
Yes. So, you know, when you are an entrepreneur or working to support a team and you experience a loss, there's two things that are happening. One, there needs to be time that is appointed for the grieving process. And two, there needs to be time for the job to be on rest. But then after that is on the rest. How do you hold these two pillars of being able to grieve and still being a productive, high-functioning entrepreneur or employee? And it really comes down to self-trust. Self-trust. So self-trust in grief means that I'm in the middle of a meeting and I feel like completely breaking down right now, and this would be not appropriate to do. I can tell myself, cool, as soon as we get that moment to grieve, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you that space to cry, to scream, to move the body. And because I have this connection and relationship with myself, I'll give myself. The key is then to now follow through with the promises you make to yourself or the commitments to allow that energy to process and go do it. And then once you've completed that cycle, taking a little bit of moment and then regenerating back into being productive, expressing this deep, deep sorrow when it is alive in you. And if you give yourself that permission to be in that, you will feel a full circle of grief, however long that takes, and you will feel yourself come back to yourself in whatever way, you know, feels comfortable. You will feel a complete arc of energy and a return to self. And so I think with entrepreneurship, it's really important to have this, because you want to be also making sure that your company is taken care of and you're taken care of, and you can do both. One doesn't have to suffer. You don't need to suffer to make the business grow, and the business doesn't need to suffer to now lose you. Both things can be true. Calling in support, calling in therapy, really just being active and turning towards your grief, which most people don't want to do or don't know how to do. But if you turn towards it, you will notice something in you that can hold it and also allow you to be productive.
Mm. This is powerful. And thank you for going deep with us on this. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, because a lot of the listeners, they're proactive, and there's this problem I see in this world where people wait for an issue to get really big to try to solve it. Mm-hmm. How can we, let's just assume like life is sunshine and rainbows right now. How can we proactively kind of implement some of this stuff today, so we're not waiting until we're in a moment of grief and it's like, oh my God, the world's falling down on me? Are there certain ways to be conscious and come to terms with this early?
Yes. Get acquainted with your death before diagnosis, before anything. If you are healthy today and vibrant today and you are wondering how would this be possible, like what you're asking, get acquainted with your death through death meditation practices, through breathing work, through psychedelics. Psychedelics is only one door into this. I don't want to make it sound like it's just the thing, because it's not for everybody, but it is one way to work with letting go and surrender, loosening control. When people in business especially have the animal of control that kind of takes hold, where they feel the need to control this and that and this, that, and the other. My number one thing with them is how acquainted are you with your death? And usually almost 99.9% of the time, that is a left field question. And they go, oh, I have never even thought about that. I'm like, well, if you can sit with letting go of you, all this other stuff will trickle down and be easier to loosen the grip on that. Cause that's the ultimate loss of human control. So getting acquainted with your death and what that means for you and all the things that arrive when you kind of turn towards that will be the bag of work to do before you actually get to the end of life or a diagnosis. Live with your death every day.
Expand on that, because you hear like get acquainted with your death. Yeah. Like a lot of people are going to try to push that exactly. energy away. Like, what does that mean? Like yeah, I'm an yeah. optimist. What are you talking about? Why would I get acquainted with death? I'm never going to die. By the time I get 80, there's going to be a pill. I'm going to live forever. Like,
but as far as we know today, you could get hit by a bus and that is the end of you as we know it in this form. But when I say get acquainted with your death, it means make death your life coach. In all decisions, in all relationships, if you were to leave this planet today, would you be satisfied? And if you're not satisfied, what can you change today? How can you relate differently to that? And that's what I mean by getting acquainted with your death every single day. It's about increasing the quality of what you find to be valuable. I've never seen a U-Haul behind a hearse. So it seems to be love and connection and compassion and growth are the things that matter a lot to people. And investigating that and what it would feel like to have to say goodbye to people that you love and how would they be holding their grief in relationship to you. So all of these things are questions to inquire about when you're making death your life coach.
What are some of the things, and instead of asking for suggestions for what we should do, I'm curious some of the things you've done to strengthen that connection, to build that human bond, to like take this realization and actually transform your own life.
Well, I've taken it a little too far. So, I mean, I have daily practices for self that I practice all throughout day is just setting my intention the first thing that I do when I wake up. What is my intention for the day? And it usually is the same thing, to operate from the highest form of love, to see the opportunity for excitement and curiosity, and to make sure that people around me know that I see them. Like, usually my intention for the day is at some kind of, you know, mark in that area. And then anytime that I feel anxious, I have anxiety, or something comes up where I'm feeling a big aliveness in my body throughout the day, I'll soften my belly and explore what is being told to me. So I'm constantly listening to how information is coming through my vessel, not just my mind in the chatter space, but my intuitive body. So I've done a lot of strengthening with my intuition, my primal instincts. And then creating the Anamkara Academy. I'm creating an army of death doulas. I am sitting bedside with people who are dying. And every time I do that, I learn something about how I wish to die, or something about my death, or something that is revealed as I'm supporting somebody in the energetics that is informative to my own personal being. So I'm just making myself available to just seize this day and use it to share myself. However that looks, it's going to just, however I can operate from the highest form of integrity in relationship to whatever it is that's in front of me at the time.
And we all should be doing this, operating for our highest form of integrity. Yours happens to be as a doula, but now you're creating an army of doulas. You're sharing the love, you're helping people. I love how you mentioned how even like when you're anxious, you're like, let's be curious about this. Let's be aware of this, because I get anxious a lot. And one thing I learned recently is that fear and excitement is basically the exact same chemical release. Mm-hmm. So if you feel that moment of like anxious fear, you can literally just tell yourself, oh my God, I'm really excited. This is important to me. Like, this is important to me. This is a good sign.
These surges of energy that we all get there. I have never talked to anybody that's like, I've never experienced anxiety. I have no idea what that must feel like. We've all experienced that. And we get these surges of information. I call it information or energy. We're not taught the tools how to kind of discern between, okay, is this my instinct saying that if I go right, there's danger? Or is this my intuition saying, don't go right because I don't know what that is and I'm too scared to grow, you know, and trying to decipher, like, what is my primal instinct for survival? Cause I'm going to sharpen that sword forever. And what is my intuition of like, okay, there's growth here and we don't know what that is, but it feels big, whatever that is. So everybody has this surge of information that goes through them. I think it's sad that a lot of people will just label themselves as having anxiety or letting their anxiety, like, it seems like the anxiety word kind of starts to have its own language and people really start to make it a, like an ownership thing where it's, no, you don't, none of that. Like, this is just an experience with information. And how are you going to be able to listen to it? Do you want to listen to it? You don't need medication sometimes to numb out your instincts.
It sounds like it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that I have anxiety. I'm an anxious person. When I go into a social situation and I quote unquote fail, well, I expected that. So this is actually what I expected because I'm an anxious person. I wasn't supposed to succeed. I was supposed to make the wrong decision. And then we create that prophecy for ourselves, which that's not actually who we are, is it?
No, but it's also very safe sometimes. Like after that self-fulfilling prophecy has happened so many times, what's happening in the mind is like, okay, the mind knows. It knows how to keep me safe. And if I'm going to keep operating in this container, well, then I'm okay because I can predict it and I'm safe. And then it becomes just automatic and then it becomes a part of the personality and then it becomes, you know, fully ingrained. And that doesn't mean it has to stay there. But it can go that way.
And to extend, and I'm curious on your insight on this, like, I feel like we start to shame ourselves. Like, I am a quiet person that doesn't deserve this. Or when I have two roads, I always seem to not listen to my intuition. I always go the wrong path. And we can't control any of those things that happened in the past, but we still kind of might shame ourselves that I did the wrong thing. I didn't live the life I deserved. I didn't make the decisions I was meant to. What do you say to a person? Because that could go on for years and years and years, and it's only going to get worse, right?
Yeah. If that was, the case and somebody is kind of seeking maybe some support with the shame cycle, I would just ask them, what is their relationship to shame? And then from there, I would probably go into really making the definition of what shame is. I think shame is a very healthy thing. If I yell at my kids and act out of integrity, I'm ashamed. I don't like that feeling. I'm so ashamed that I'm going to change that shameful behavior to operate better. The shame that comes with, you can feel the difference in that, right? So like that's going to make me a better person. Now the shame cycle comes in when you go, I keep doing it. I can't get better. I can't seem to stop breaking myself out of this and this. Well, now you're just creating walls. And now you're using shame against you. Shame is supposed to make you self-analyze and create better solutions and outcomes, not to keep you in a self-holding pattern. So if you can distinguish the two areas in your life, you can quickly start to disconnect from the one that's holding you in the pattern to get down to what is the real truth here. At the bottom of the shame, what is the highest intention that you're trying to get to from there to here? And then we build that bridge.
What are some of the ways to build the bridge?
Yeah, self-inquiry, sometimes journaling, meditation, and inner child work. Really understanding, where did shame come from in the first place? And typically it's like you took the toy from your brother, you're on timeout. And that's fine if that's how the family structure goes, but rarely after the kid's on timeout do the parents go and help them now dissect and distinguish like what was the right behavior, what was the wrong behavior. Sometimes kids kind of have to digest pieces of that on their own. But shame usually is typically things that we see in our childhood, TV shows, social cultural things that are around us, and then just our own personal stories with it. And not really, shame goes very inward. And if you get hardwired to keep the shameful things here really, really tight, shame immediately goes away as soon as we start talking about it. It kind of loses its power. When we go, oh, you went through that too? I'm not alone. You feel that way as well? Thank God. I thought I was just like sitting here with this, we find out so much when we take that container of shame out and share it with safe community. I want to dispel and bring more truth, however that is, to that. And it's typically through a lot of open-ended questions. And I lead people to find that on their own.
Because it's going to be unique to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. And shame, it goes all the way from business to people on their deathbed. Regrets, unfinished bills, but regret, we call it rugs. Regrets, unfinished build, business, guilt, and shame are the things that as death doulas, we help people decipher at the end of life where they're at.
Talk about that, because I've heard a little bit about this, but I want to hear it from you. Like, when someone is nearing death, what are the kind of comments, regrets, unfinished business? Like, what are the kind of things they say, right? Like, you tell me, like, what comes to light?
I can tell you some of the common things that come up for regrets. Not telling enough people how they really feel, good or bad. not investing their time into their dharma, which was what they came here really to do.
Explain dharma.
Dharma. So dharma is like, I truly believe I'm living my dharma. I can, and I know that because when I think about doing this every single day, it feels like just expansive. There's no like, oh, okay, well, when I'm 70, I'll be able to retire and then I can live my life. Like, this is me in my life now. I'm doing it now. And so I'm in my Dharma. And the Dharma is like, what has your soul called you to do? Whatever that is, we have a calling within us. And I guarantee it's not finance and insurance, although that could be a vehicle to get you to your Dharma. A Dharma is usually rooted in selfless service. People at the end of life can really regret not spending their time doing more of that, or spending their time with their children more, or the people that they find valuable. So it's usually about time and how it was spent and words said or wish they could take back.
And if we're hearing this right now, it's truly a blessing, because we can make a change now. Like, if we know that we're going to regret, like, we didn't live our Dharma, we didn't say the things that we felt, we wanted more time with our loved ones, we wanted more time, you know, doing things that made us better and not bitter, we can start immediately, right?
Now today. You can be a whole different person. If you wake up today and realize that how you have been relating to the world is not for you anymore, just change it. And I know that sounds like really, really easy. And sometimes there's a lot of micro decisions and changes, of course, to do it, but start somewhere to be the best version of you. Doesn't take 8 years. It takes a moment to just relate to yourself different. And honestly, it's not even relating to yourself differently that's not rooted in truth. Relating to yourself as you really are, being honest with yourself, being in your truth. You can do that right now, here, today, and you don't need to spend money on a journey. You don't have to go to Peru and drink ayahuasca. You don't have to spend thousands on a therapist. You are your healer. You are your guru. You hear the answers every single day to what is the best, and you are making choices. And so listen to yourself.
Listen to yourself, be in your truth. And this is hypothetical, but like, when we do come towards death, what are the kind of things we're going to be saying? Like in a perfect world, we're not going to be filled with these regrets. Let's say we start living in our truth now. What does that end of life look like for us?
Well, I can tell you, I've seen deaths that are resistant and deaths that are fully surrendered, meaning they're just ready to go into the next phase. And it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful. It looks, I should say what it feels like.
Okay.
So as the body weakens, the energy heightens. And when you are in the room with somebody who is prepared, that energy feels like, for me, it feels like if you ever walked in a river going the opposite, and it's not like the river's strong enough to take you away, but you can feel the flow going this way.
As resistance.
I can feel the energy in the room kind of like that. Huh. And it's like almost tangible. And in resistant death or non-resistant, I feel this energy. But when I am in the presence of somebody who's willing to let go, who has done the work, it is one of the most, how do you describe witnessing somebody fully just, it's like sitting at the feet of masters. That's what it feels like.
I'm just sitting with that for a moment.
It's the best way to describe it.
So we dove right in and did a slight disservice to the listener. They're probably curious more than just what you know, but like why you know it. Like, where did this Dharma, this process start for you? Like, it's a very unique industry that most of my listeners aren't in.
Yeah.
How'd you get your start?
when I died at four. At four, I drowned. I didn't go to a life review or a light or anything like that. Well, I do believe that that does exist. But as a child, I just went to nothing. I went to nothingness. And after that, I can say the world changed. I remember being able to see angels in my room and crying because I was so like, I mean, we're talking like an 8-year-old kid here, being so overwhelmed with love, like maybe you would see somebody on like a MDMA or something, just like that open heart. Like I was feeling that and seeing these angels in my room, like, and that never went away. That never went away. And I was able to really make this connection with the other side. And fast forward into my teens, I was raised in a Christian home, and I was volunteer for a group called Agape Club and Titus, which is teens in training into service. And I would volunteer at end of life care facilities. And as a child, I saw more life at the end of life. I'm glad I got to witness death in that way, because that was the truth. I was seeing more of that than this, what I saw adults kind of interpreting as what was going on. And so I could see that difference. And then fast forward, you know, I'm 40 now, but I was just about to turn 30, and my world as a medicine facilitator opened up, and I was sharing plant medicines with people. And my grandfather died. And when he died, I was like, in this interesting space with him, because I was doing the energetic work that I would do on somebody on medicine, but he was dying. And I left my grandpa's death grieving, yes, but like, what was that? I need to do that again. Like, how do I get with more dying people? I had no idea what a death doula was. 3 weeks after he died, I was in a parking lot, and somebody that I knew and was close to me looked at me and he said, "Have you ever heard of becoming a death doula?" And as soon as he said those two words, honestly, I've never felt my body come more alive. And I was like, that's it. That's what I was doing with my grandpa. I was death doulaing him. Great. And so there I went off, got certified. I worked in the finance and insurance industry for 16 years and put in my 3 months notice because I really loved them. And I felt like they needed that kind of like respect to kind of end it like wholly and complete. And then off I went. And so that's kind of like the rough storyline of my journey of becoming an end-of-life doula, because it's been filled with magic and synchronicity. It's been filled with a voice inside that's been guiding me each step of the way and bringing the right people in front of me to learn more and to expand more and to give more. And so I've just been on this magical journey of life and death ever since.
Would you have it any other way?
No, absolutely not. No. Yeah, I get to, like, it's great. You know, I just can't find myself. Like, I think about it sometimes, like, how would it feel if I went into the motorcycle industry again and sat behind a desk and did the contract and da-da-da-da-da? Yeah. That would be my death. That would be my death, because it's all, none of it matters. Like, once you've sat in the truth, like a job or a service that's rooted in nothing but the truth, there's so much realness and so much energy and so much authenticity in that, that I couldn't make myself go back to sleep at a 9-to-5.
If someone's hairs are lifting up a little bit, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm actually making good money, but I don't know if I'm meant to be here in my role. What would you say to that person that's like, yikes, maybe I am not going in the right path with my career?
Yeah, explore that. And you can, and as you explore your dharma and what is going to be fulfilling for the next version of yourself, you can still use the current situation of making a lot of money to be the vehicle that gets you to the next place. Before I quit my job in the finance and insurance industry, I had a significant amount of money to last me for a couple of years so that I could fully fall into it without scarcity being a part of it.
Right.
And so do all the things in the foresight that you'd be, you know, okay, I need this, I need that. I would feel most motivated if I had these things in my life, and then create that and then slowly make that transition. You can make it overnight. I never want to tell anybody like, quit your job today. You know, you do it at the pace that makes you feel nurtured, and you don't have to do it from a place of, well, I guess this is my dharma now and I just have to do it and I'm going to trust. No, build systems to support yourself.
And I'm going to reflect back and generalize a little bit, but just as a heads up. So like taking 2 years to do something that might feel difficult, whether it's save up money, put together a plan, work in a career that isn't uplifting me, taking that 2 years and then living the next 30 in bliss, after those 32 years, I'm probably not going to look back and regret taking those 2 years that weren't perfect, right?
Yeah, and in those 2 years were absolutely perfect because it was in preparation for, it was the vehicle that, it was the thing that could, it was that time that I took to prepare wasn't terrible because I already said yes to death. Even when clients would come and buy a motorcycle, all of a sudden they'd leave my office crying because we'd do a whole grief session buying a motorcycle. Like the work started to come to me, and I was able and lucky enough to be in a job that fully saw my uniqueness. And I was able to do the professional side, but also I could see how my gift was being nourished even in that waiting time.
Love this. So businessy stuff. How did this intuition and gift actually lead to income? Because there's a lot of people that are creative types or work in an industry that isn't. There's lots of advisors, insurance agents, real estate, brokers. There's a lot of ways to make good money in industries that are typical. You're doing a great job in an industry that is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did that work?
Yeah. So I would say the first place you want to start off on in this kind of conversation would be do a meditation around what the spirit of money is to you. And when I say spirit of money, people get really triggered because money has brought up a lot of ugliness in the world, but it's also brought a lot of healing. Mm-hmm. And so we need to decipher how you have interpreted abundance flow, because we have more money in our, we'll call it vortex, than we can spend in 8 lifetimes. The money is there. I'm out of the paradigm that like we're capped here. Like it's everywhere, and it doesn't necessarily mean X amount in my bank. So I'm very aware that abundance comes in many, many forms. So figuring out what money means to you, what you would like to offer the spirit of money and what the spirit of money would like to offer back to you. So if you're going to be in this kind of entrepreneurship of spiritually led, get in touch with the energetics of money. And then what we were walking through how I got there. Okay. And then, I have agreements with myself, source, God, I don't know, however anybody wants to label the thing that we feel and can't see. My agreement with it is that I will never charge a dying person for anything. I work 100% on donation basis. And then I charge fully for my clients who aren't facing diagnosis and medicine ceremony. So like, that's where that supports the freeness over there. I have my end of life school that does really, really well and supports me and my volunteer work as well. So I have places in my life where I am paid exactly what I value the product to be. I have a sliding scale, and then I have volunteer. And I think if you can really see this as a whole system, not one where you're giving into and losing. If you can see it as a whole system that feeds the other, one cup pours into the other and goes back and forth. If you can start to play and see it like that, it grows. It grows and creates a feeling of safety, because we're when we're really giving from a place of authenticity, we're supported. And I know that in the business world, there needs to be a graph and there needs to be an outcome and there needs to be data. But in my business, that just doesn't exist. I'm not building a Starbucks. I'm building a bridge in between worlds. That takes me just listening to what is appropriate moment to moment. Sometimes when I get a client on the phone and I think I'm going to be charging them full price before we get on, immediately spirit, and they'll be saying all the things. I'm like, okay, well, I just want to let you know, I'm going to be doing all of this on donation based. You know, it can switch like that because I see them and I understand what's happening. And there's another voice that's guiding this interaction. And I just listen.
You're not predetermining the outcome. You don't have the tunnel vision. You have the awareness to see the bigger perspective and the buckets that could be filled.
Yeah. And the seeds that you plant today don't necessarily flourish today. And my biggest example of that is when I was becoming an end-of-life doula, I went to a spa and it was like sauna and cold plunges and, you know, just a really great place to mud and hang out and relax. And I was in a sauna and these two women walked in and immediately a little boy spirit walked in. And when people say, I don't see it, I feel it, it goes in my mind. And then there's different symbols that I can be like, oh, okay, that's a little boy walking in. So I don't physically see it. I always like to let people know I don't see it. But I felt as if there was a little boy that had passed that came with these two women. And so we're talking and I'm feeling like, ugh, all right. And it's not going, I feel like this little kid's just tugging on me. Tell my mommy I'm here. Tell her I'm here. Mm. So I go, okay. After a minute of getting comfortable to say this, I was like, okay. I don't know which one of you have lost maybe a brother or a son. But it's a little boy that walked in when you guys both came here. This woman turns almost white. She goes, I lost my son 2 years ago. Immediately, my whole body just amplifies. And I go, okay, cool. Let's go outside. So we're outside and this little place where maybe you take a shower, like hiding behind this little building. And I'm giving her the full reading, hour and a half. I didn't need to charge her. This was an exchange of two souls coming together and a mother needing to know that her son was right there. And to have that validation from the complete stranger meant something. Fast forward 3 years later, now we're in COVID. I get a random call from this woman. Her father is dying and they need support. So now I've got a client, right? And now the sister who never met me wants to go to my school and be an end-of-life doula, right? So now this service where I just planted some seeds and just supported her to the highest degree is now coming back to not only have me now support them, but now financially things are coming towards me as well. So this is what I mean. And this is when I first, I was like, okay, I'm on to like really starting to discover how it kind of bounces back, and it can bounce off really quickly, or it might take years. But I know when I give authentically, yes. I know when I give authentically, it comes from a place that only can mirror back support to myself, because the universe wants me to do it more. That's why it feels so good.
You just nailed the key. Like it feels good. Mm-hmm. Isn't that like one of the most important things?
Yeah.
In life, like if we don't feel good, that's a sign, right? If we do feel good, that's a positive indicator, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we don't feel good, that's time to now investigate where in all of this are you not feeling like your highest best self? Where do you feel like you're being depleted? Where do you, you know, there might be holes in that. So it should feel good. And most people, you know, I was telling my students last week was all about volunteer work. And I was describing, you know, the universe creates certain things to feel good because it wants us to keep doing it. Sex. The reason why it feels good is because we're supposed to keep creating humans to come back and love this planet. Like we're here because, and we do it over and over and over. It's the same thing with selfless service. It feels good because we're supposed to keep doing it.
I love this. And I love that you've used the term investigate a few times, and it's not, here's the playbook, here's the answer. It's like, be a scientist, be curious, be an investigator. Like, we all have a unique story in life and gifts, and it's really just our role to investigate and find it, right?
Yeah, investigate. Look, and investigate is my way of saying, look outside of yourself through a different perspective and see what is really true here or possible for you here. Look at yourself, honestly. It is the biggest gift we can give ourselves, is to not be in reactivity, but to be in observation and curious about how we relate to others and ourselves.
Well, Mary, thank you for sharing the space with me. In a second, we'll go rapid fire to close out.
But
before we go rapid fire, the listeners are all over the globe. Most of them are in the United States, but they're international. How do they, I mean, you're probably not going to fly out to see them. Maybe you will. How do they keep in touch with you? Like, how does this work?
For people who are dying?
You know, I don't know, because everyone's
in general, every
individual is in a different place. Yeah. How do they keep in touch with you?
You can connect with me through my website, connectanamkara.com. You connect with me via Facebook or Instagram. Any one of these ways, you know, people kind of float in through all different ways. So find me, and I'm happy to have a conversation with you.
And there's a course for people that want to be doulas as well.
Yeah.
And do you fly in to be with someone, or do you do virtual?
My course is online. So they have a body of work to do each week. And then once a week, we come together in a coaching call to discuss and go in more in depth around that week's module. And that's rinse and repeat for 12 weeks. And then twice a year, I take my students to Mexico for the graduation. And we have a celebration, and so with plant medicine, it's not required, but it is a part of the retreat. And that's where they graduate. And if they never wanted to go to the retreat and that doesn't sound like their cup of tea, then I send them their certificate via mail.
So, love it.
Yeah.
So rapid fire, these are just short, random questions that I want to ask, but it's hard to weave into conversation sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with who's your hero?
I've got a lot of them. I would say, top of the list, Ram Dass. Mm. Ram Dass is definitely a teacher that I look to and see so many different lessons that I can alchemize and then share. Ram Dass, my children are my heroes. I love to witness life through them. They've given me such vitality and a childlike expression of myself that I truly appreciate. They are my heroes. So they're really, really cool. My sisters, my circle of women that I have in my life is extremely strong. And any woman in my life, at this point in my life, if you're in it, I look up to you. You're my hero. Just such a variety of women doing such amazing work in this world. And any death doula, anybody that's been through the Anamkara Academy, anybody that's willing to sit with death and to love humanity that much to witness the end of somebody is my hero as well.
Thank you for this answer. I asked who's your hero, which is singular, and you just elaborated on the fact that we can have hundreds of heroes. It doesn't have to be one deity, one being.
There's so many more too. I look up to a lot of people. And because everywhere you go, there you are. And so I see people as parts of myself, and I really, really enjoy humanity, even though we're in an interesting place. If you're human, whether you're operating from the highest form or the lowest form, like, we're here and we're doing the work, and maybe that even is my hero. Anybody that's alive, like, I don't know. I can't single out one person. It would be impossible for me.
This next question will be kind of a choose your own adventure as well, because I'm curious. It can be personal professional, mm-hmm. or you could talk about both, proudest moments of your life.
Yeah, I mean, right back to, I mean, my kids come in first.
Yes.
Watching who they're becoming and how they're impacting lives. And I mean, I have a 21-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 1-year-old. So my 1-year-old, anytime he learns a new word, I'm like, oh my God, so pretty. You know, so it's a full spectrum with the kids. And I think a lot of people can understand that. Creating the Anamkara was a huge proud moment for me. And just to witness how many people have come through the school and to see how they use this to help and support people dying in their communities. I mean, that is a constant proud moment when I think about it, when I'm driving or anytime, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how special is this to see this ripple effect going out. So I think my day is kind of littered with proud moments.
It's a great problem to have.
yeah.
We'll do one more kind of big one. Sometimes I keep these lighthearted. I wanted to go really deep with you. So what's one of your biggest goals right now, and how can me and the listener help you accomplish it, if possible?
My biggest goal is to rebrand death. That's my highest goal for, I mean, that's what we're doing this for, is to change the conversation around death. That's my highest goal, to give people the highest quality of death that they're calling in. And, you know, to see the legalization of psychedelics marrying the end of life process is definitely something that is in that category as well.
And how can we help you?
Yeah. You know, we as a collective have conversations with yourself, have conversations with people that you love. If somebody in your life is grieving, hold that space with non-judgment. That's another way you can rebrand death, is just allowing somebody to sit in their pain. And then anywhere in your community where you have a possibility to vote on legalization for psychedelic research in your area, that is helpful as well.
I didn't go the psychedelic route in this conversation because we'd end up doing like a...
That would be in a whole other episode.
But I'll give you the space. I'm just curious why you're so passionate about plant medicine as a whole.
Well, I mean, I just seen what it's done for myself. And I don't know if it's possible for me. It might be possible for somebody else. And like I said at the beginning, psychedelics isn't for everybody. It's not a one size, and it's not me being like a preacher about it. But I know that if you have a curiosity about it, it's something that you want to bring into your life. It is your birthright to explore your consciousness in this way. And so I'm passionate about it because anybody should have this experience if it's something they're looking for. And I've seen what it looks like when you serve somebody at the end of life psychedelics and how beautiful that can be.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary, thank you for spending time with us. I put myself in this category. If anybody felt a little uneasy during this conversation, you said to yourself, investigate. And tell us once more how we can keep in touch with you.
Yeah. connectanamkara@gmail.com or connectanamkara.com. Visit me on my Instagram, Mary_Taliano. Send me a message. I'd love to connect with anybody that wants to connect with me in the first place. So happy to do that.
And this isn't our first rodeo. They're all in the show notes. That's how I met Mary. It was through another podcast. And you never know what'll come through just sending a quick DM or a quick request or just even like a like and loving on someone and making their day. So I encourage everybody to do that for Mary and myself. Mm-hmm. And thanks again for going here with me. This was fun.
This was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.